Welcome back once again to the Unboxed broadcast. Today is part two of our interview with Mr. James Sweat, a former high-level banking executive and now owner of Goosehead Insurance. We'll continue to talk about his family, his life, and his leadership philosophy. And in honor of Black History Month, we'll learn more, continue to learn more about his family, and pick his brain about leadership development from an African-American perspective. We're ready to dive in. We're excited you're here. So stick around as we help you unbox the power and potential of your leadership.
I'm Dr. Robert Davis, family life educator and leadership coach. This is my co-host, R.P. Soriano. Soriano attended John Hopkins Carey Business School, worked in the financial industry, and was an international consultant before partnering with me to launch Unbox the Lead. Me? Well, I worked for over 20 years as a senior pastor and a community organizer. Then I retired and started a leader's peer support community called Unbox the Lead. Soriano and I have been friends since the early 90s, and with our varied experiences and expertise, we help leaders reach the next level in their leadership. So join us for the next few moments as we unbox the power and the potential of your relationships, your leadership, and your life.
Welcome back, everyone. We are at part two of our interview with Mr. James Sweat. We're going to just dive right back into that interview. If you didn't see the first broadcast, you can go to our website, www.unboxtolead.com. You can visit our blog page, and there you can see the part one of that interview. I want to remind everyone to like, share, and subscribe to the broadcast as well. Be sure to follow all of our social pages. You can visit our blog, as I mentioned before, where you can access all of the past episodes. Also want to remind everyone about our Leaders Peer Support Community BIPOC Nonprofit Executive Scholarship. We have 20 slots available for leaders of BIPOC nonprofits and community organizations. You can learn more by visiting our website at www.unboxtolead.com/scholarship. And we do, in the first part of our interview, we did a very in-depth conversation about the scholarship with more details. So be sure to check that out if you have not already. Okay, so we're back. Robert, why don't you give us a little kind of a summary of what we got from part one and reintroduce to those who are joining us for the first time, our distinguished guest.
Yeah, and like you said, if you didn't get a chance to see part one, you've got to go back and watch part one on all of our social media platforms, as well as on our website. We've been having a conversation with James Sweat, been talking about his family. He's been able to trace his family roots all the way back to slavery. And the entrepreneurial spirit is just encoded into his family's DNA. And his mother and father instilled so many strong values that has helped him to succeed in corporate America and has helped him to succeed as an entrepreneur. And so I am so glad to have him with us today. I had the distinct privilege of being his pastor when I pastored in Charlotte, North Carolina, and we've remained friends ever since. And so I'm just happy to welcome back with us today the owner broker with Goosehead Insurance, James Sweat. James, welcome back again.
Appreciate that.
All right, James, I'm go ahead, Robert, sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, man, Raphael, I had a great conversation with him last time, but I think that there are some things that you wanted to dive into. So I'm gonna take a backseat and let you drive the car a little bit.
I have to say it was very difficult to not almost stop the interview constantly to ask, tell me more about that. That is fascinating. Yeah. Give me more. I mean, this is what a great story and what a great experience you've had. And particularly what jumps out at me is what Robert has mentioned before is the influence of your parents and also understanding your family history and how that's influenced your choices and your decisions in life. And you also talked about your connection with your spiritual convictions and your personal beliefs and how that has also been kind of I would say you had the one piece of your home life and your history, and you felt that it was very important for your moral compass to have a very strong spiritual life. And so I like seeing how you've kind of, you know, ordered your life to meet everything about or to be a complete and whole person. So you've talked about, again, you talked about, and again, I just as Robert said, if you really have to listen to part one of the interview to really get the full meat of the question that I'm gonna ask you now. But you talked about your mom and her being a business owner and your father being a business owner. Can you talk about a leader? I wouldn't say you can continue to talk about your parents if you want, if they are the ones who were your biggest inspiration as a leader to influencing and shaping you, that I think that'd be great. But if there's anyone out there, whether it be, you know, someone along the path in your corporate experience or someone of a national or global figure that really inspired you, can you talk about that?
You know, I had several mentors when I was in the corporate world. So, you know, to name one would be kind of hard, but I would say that each mentor I had at each stop along the way was really important in giving me some insights and some guidance to help to avoid the potholes, quote unquote, that you can hit, or to guide you at certain times where you may be, you know, challenged and need some help to, you know, give some cover or some things like that. So I think there was several folks along the way that I, you know, I can't name them all, but I think it's important that you, along the way, you foster and have friendships and talk with people and know people a little differently and, you know, never judge a book by its cover, right? I think one of the experiences I had was an experience where I was working on this initiative. And it was a pretty good size initiative, and there were some things going on with the initiative. And one person came in and kind of, you know, took me under his wing kind of thing. And one of the things he said to me afterwards was, and I think some of this was from my, you know, background we talked about earlier, having that persistence to keep on keeping on. And so there were some challenges early on in the initiative and challenges of some things that were going on around the initiative, and some questions came up and persisted through that. And he said to me, he said, James, at the end of it, he said, James, I think everybody found out you had a lot more wind in your sails than they thought. And I was like, I appreciate that. And so when he said that, it was an aha moment, right? Because it was a combination of everything I learned to be persistent, to keep going through and keep doing that, right? And so, and to, you know, not let something stop you or let a hurdle prevent you from getting where you need to go, right? And doing what you need to do. So I think that was an important thing. I think the other thing that's important, since we're in Black History Month, I think it's important that I share this too, because it's a part of the DNA for my family. My great uncle, his name was Heman Sweat, and my great uncle was educated person, because education is key in my family. On both sides of my family, there was education from the start to the finish. Everybody believed in that as a key component, right? Once again, your brain is as good as anybody else's.
Right. Okay.
And so at that particular time in the 30s and 40s, you can only do so many things as a Black person, right? You could be a preacher, a teacher, or a doctor.
Yeah.
Those were the three things, right? And he decided he was going to push back on that. He decided he wanted to go to law school. And so at that particular point in time, there was no such thing, as especially in the South, as a person of color, a Black person going to law school. You just didn't do that. You weren't allowed to, right? And so, but his education was impeccable. He was a very intelligent man, right? Highly educated. And so he actually applied to the University of Texas, right? And he should have been accepted, and they didn't. And they couldn't explain why he wasn't accepted. So the NAACP joined him in his fight against that.
Wow.
And there's a person you're probably familiar with in history books that was his lawyer.
Thurgood Marshall.
Thurgood Marshall. That's exactly right. Right? So Thurgood Marshall worked the case, and it was more of a, it was a larger strategy, right? This was a case, this was a building block case for the Board versus Board of Education. Okay. So this was, the case became Sweat versus Painter. Painter was the admissions director for the University of Texas. So Sweat versus Painter became a big case for my uncle to go to law school. And Thurgood Marshall and my uncle worked on this case for 3 years, and they won.
Wow.
So my uncle was accepted to the University of Texas Law School.
Right? They should have just given him his degree right when he walked in. Yeah.
Well, they didn't do that. It got a little bit more difficult than that. So, but I will say, I'll stop there because I can go a long time about this case. But the point is, he persisted to go forward with that, right? And that became a building block. He became the first person of color accepted to the University of Texas Law School. So there's a statue of my uncle at the University of Texas today. And a law school building there is named after him for being the first Afro-American to go to law school there. Right? So it's civil rights kind of a history. That's kind of the history of the people I come from. Right?
I mean, it's absolutely fascinating and wonderful to hear. And I think about, so let me ask you this then. I mean, you've talked about how mentors played such a role in your life. Is that part of what you do? Do you kind of see yourself as a mentor? And I guess, because the next question I'm going to ask is for you to kind of discuss your philosophy of leadership or your leadership vision. And I'm wondering where mentorship, what role that plays for you personally.
Yeah, mentorship is definitely part of what I like to do. Right. I don't try to force myself on anybody. Right. But if there's opportunity to mentor and they're open, I will do that. Right. So in my corporate journey, I had several people I had a chance to mentor, and I was excited about that. And had, you know, I saw those people go ahead and do some other things, do some good things. Right. I've had a chance to mentor some people in different aspects of my life, different, doing different things. So I think it's an important thing to do. To mentor, especially if you see someone that could use a help or use a suggestion, or use an idea, or maybe need somebody to give them some cover, right? Or let somebody know that they could do some things that are different. Give them a chance to start thinking outside the box. Give them a chance to broaden their horizons, not to think about things, right? One of the things I like to do is I get a chance to talk to young people and young groups and things like that. And so I ask kids, you know, what do you want to do? What do you want to be? I want to be Jordan. I want to be this. I said, have you ever thought about being the guy who pays Jordan? You ever thought about that? You ever thought about the guy who's paying Patrick Mahomes? Think about that.
Yeah, I'm kind of worried about that. I'm worried about that guy that's paying Patrick Mahomes. His bank is dwindling for sure.
Right. It's a different level, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if you can pay somebody $250 million a year, then how much do you have?
That's right. That's right. Because you're definitely not going hungry. You're not going hungry to feed them, to pay them.
No, you're not going hungry to feed them. So I guess I use that as an example just to say, think about things differently.
Yeah. Right? No, that is a good example.
Right. And same thing with doing things from the standpoint of corporate or doing things here. I think the system is set so that there's huge advantages if you're an independent business person in America. If you own shingle, your own business, right? And I definitely encourage my daughters to think about running their own thing, doing their own thing, as opposed to working for somebody else, right?
Yeah.
Because when you can do your own thing, do your own business, have your own business, you have much more opportunity and much more runway, right?
Exactly.
If you're working for somebody else, you'll be limited to what somebody else wants to pay for you, or what they want to do for you. How far they want to let you go, right?
Yeah.
Right? And so I think about it from that, especially when I think about Black History Month now, right? It used to be a time where we had segregation. In segregation, people of color were forced to deal with people of color because other folks didn't want to deal with you.
Yeah.
So that's when you had Black Wall Street in Tulsa, but you had Black Wall Streets in cities all across the nation.
Exactly.
Because they had to deal with that. And the dollar turned over in our community more, right? So if we have more people of color doing things with people of color, then the dollars can turn over more, and then we can do more things of empowerment in our communication, in our own communities, right? Now I don't want to mention money like it's the end all be all. It's not. You know, spiritually, I was doing a study this 2 weeks ago, a lesson study, and money, if not used properly, is like sand. It's just worthless. Right?
Yeah.
If you don't use money properly, that's where the spiritual side comes in, right? How do you use your money, right? If you're not using money to uplift people or to do things differently or to help others, then what good is it? And at the end of the day, what can you say that you did with your money? Oh, I got a new car, or I got a new house, or you can say that you helped somebody.
I remember there's an attorney here in the Denver area, a very prominent attorney, who shared something with my daughter. She said, go into, you know, pursue your passion, your dreams, et cetera, but do it in a way that makes money, because poor people don't have the ability to help others, especially other poor people. And so finances puts you in a position to be able to actually help, in the position to be able to impact systems and to bring about structural changes that you just don't have if you don't have the resources. And so it's not about, as you just said, it's not just about gaining wealth so that you can, you know, I got a big car, I got money, money, money. It's about being able to actually improve and lift up your community. And I subscribe to that wholeheartedly. And like you said, that's the spiritual. I think one of the things as leaders that we don't think enough about is, what is our spiritual North Star? What is it that is the guiding philosophy and principle behind how I make decisions, how I come to conclusions, how I manage relationships and everything? What is that North Star? And too many other leadership developments leave out that all important, or gloss over that all important component of spiritual development.
So I want to chime in here on yeah. that specifically. I think that it would be good to just kind of expand that in the sense of just saying of also thinking about people who do not have a faith tradition or don't have a spiritual preference per se, because we still need those people to be good people. We need them to have a moral compass. I think what you've pointed out so well is, what are the questions that I'm asking myself? Or what are the questions that other people are asking me? So instead of, you know, when you ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you ask these young people that, and they say exactly what they see. I want to be the glitz and the star. I want to be that person. But you're asking another question. And you're forcing people to think about something or to ask questions in their own mind. So what about the person who's paying that star that you see? What about the person behind all of that? So I think when it goes over to whether it's our spiritual moral compass or just our moral compass, we have to ask ourselves these universal questions. What are my actions? How are my actions going to impact? Are they going to be hurtful and harmful to me, or to other people, or to both? And what is that, you know, what does that mean? What do I do from there? What kind of person do I want to be? You know, I want to be the type of person I can look myself in the mirror. And people will make that decision without necessarily pinning a spiritual or religious belief to it. They have to have that. I mean, we need people to be able to know that, that not having a spiritual path does not mean you cannot be a moral person. You don't get an out. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, say, well, I don't go to church, so I can do that. That's no. Doesn't work like that. You know, right? It's just it's the same way as the law applies, right? You can say, well, you know, I don't do X and X, so speeding down the road at 100 miles an hour doesn't apply to me. No, it doesn't work. It applies to everybody. That's how it works. I just want to throw that in there. And I know that I know that no one is disagreeing with that, but I do just want to make sure that our listeners, you know, that you have that side of it.
Let me throw in something here to go full circle, right? So we talked about a lot of different things. Let me bring it back. It started off with me having my own insurance brokerage, right?
Yeah.
So how do I do that from an insurance perspective? What do I do daily to do that? How do I serve people that I talk to, right? So I made it a mantra from the time I started doing this that I was going to give people the knowledge they need to have. Mm. I'm not going to be selling something, but I'm going to tell them why they should have it and why it's important.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the things that really just blew me away, but I was disappointed, but I wasn't surprised. Right. So I told you I had inherited this agency initially before I changed my own broker, as Captain Carrier. And the people of color in there, almost all their policies were like minimum coverages. So what does that mean? Right. So if you get an insurance policy and you get your car insurance policy. So for me, being a professional, I knew in corporate America that I need to have a policy for at least $250,000 each accident, $500,000 for total coverage for liability. Minimum. Yeah,
minimum.
Right. These people were getting policies for $30,000 and $60,000. State minimum policies. It wasn't that they couldn't afford the other policies. There was a perception by the persons that were selling them insurance, just give them the minimum. They just want the lowest cost anyway, and they'll be okay.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So in educating people to get policies that they can afford and also explain to them why they want to have a higher coverage, right? So if you get into an accident, and you are driving down the road and you hit somebody, have an accident, and maybe it turns into a multiple car accident, and the cost comes up to $300,000, and you got a $60,000 policy, where are they going to get that money from?
Yeah.
They're going to go after your house. They're going to go after your savings account. You're going to have a dramatic family impact because you had an accident. Where you could have afforded a policy, could have paid for it, right? I've seen people go bankrupt and heard stories of people going bankrupt because they didn't have adequate insurance.
And they thought that they were covered. They thought that what they had was enough. And they thought they were doing the right thing. They were doing exactly what they were told to do. Get insurance. Right. I got insurance. You know,
I got full coverage. What do you mean you got full coverage? No, you really don't.
Right.
Yeah.
So what I'm doing in my role every day, I try to make sure that I share that with someone, right? And give them educational things, right? Earlier just today, before I jumped in this call, early this evening or early, late this afternoon, I had a client session, an insurance review with some customers, right? And they were asking me about life insurance. Why is life insurance important, right? And I explained to them the differences between whole life and term life insurance, right? And why you should get one thing as opposed to another. They didn't have a clue, right? They just thought they just need to get insurance. Someone told me to get whole life insurance. But do you know why you need to get it? So I go through and explain to them what the pros and cons of each of those are, and then why they may want to do something different and approach it from this way. To make sure that people have education, understand to make an educated decision, right? And I share that with people, especially people of color that hasn't been shared with before. So they would know that. Pastor and I have seen way too many cases of people at church that have a sudden death in the family and they got to pass the hat.
Yeah, now it's the GoFundMe page. Everybody,
GoFundMe page, right? And if you just bought a $100,000 policy, $20 a month, that's better than a final expense policy. You at least have enough to pay for the funeral and maybe take care of some expenses. If you really think it out and do more, you would get $250,000, $500,000, or $1 million of coverage. Right?
Exactly.
And make sure you do that while you're healthy. I got some people who are paying for, you know, $500,000 policies because they got it 20 years ago are paying like $12 a month. Right?
Man.
And if something happens, they will be passing the hat. And so another thing is these kind of things are, these funds, the proceeds from the life policy can't replace the person, but they can replace the income. Plus,
yeah.
Go ahead.
So no, I was going to say.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
What I was going to say is that, so when you start talking about finances, once again, it comes full circle again. Mm-hmm. Because a death in the family, like it did, like some people died in COVID. There were some families out there that did, there have been some family dynamics that have been destroyed because of COVID. Yeah. And disproportionately because people of color were impacted by that. Because they didn't have basic systems, security systems, risk preventions in place to absorb some of that. You can't replace the lost one, but you can replace the income. But if you can't replace the income, you have families being broken up. If a parent dies, and you know, or two parents die, and the kids, what do the kids do? You got to go stay with grandma, go stay with uncle. Nobody's got any money. How are they going to be feeling about that? They may treat them well the first couple of months, but after a while it becomes, now I got a burden. As opposed to saying, I got a trust in place. This trust is going to take care of their expenses for them.
You know, it's interesting that you're talking about this, James, because it does speak to the just the systemic inequities that have existed in African-American communities. You talked about something very important a moment ago. You said your uncle, an American citizen in the 1930s, had to team up with a renowned lawyer in Thurgood Marshall to get admitted into law school. And I think a lot of people, when we start having these conversations around inequities, tend to miss this point that it wasn't so long ago. I mean, if I threw a rock as hard as I could, I might be able to get it to about 1969, 1968. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
And this is leading somewhere to a question I'm going to ask you. You again, referencing your uncle, University of Texas, fighting just to get admitted into law school. He had everything that was necessary and needed. There was no reason why he should have been disqualified. But this was the case for Americans, American citizens. This was the case for American citizens throughout so much of the history of America. And so and you're talking about how Americans, African Americans, have not had access to basic information on how to protect themselves, how to build wealth, and how to protect themselves. And people think, well, they tend to think, well, you know, everything is equal in the world. Why is it? And you look and you see, well, there's only been a short amount of time that African Americans have been able to play in the game. So the question I want to ask now. America's had this, I wouldn't say an awakening, because I think we've been different parts in history where America has had these awakenings. But in our generation, I think we can say at no point, at least in my generation, have I seen such open conversations about this issue and such a willingness for organizations and corporations to say, hey, we have to make this equal. I'm in my 40s.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, I've never heard these deliberate conversations and outcries to say society has to be equal. We need to level the playing field. We need to bring more people of color onto boards and put them in the executive suites and all of, you know, and make it equal. My question is for you, as you've mentored, as you've experienced, what do leaders, African-American leaders, and potential leaders need to do to help African-Americans and other people of color per se, but specifically African-Americans, deal with this new reality, this shift? Because now all of a sudden, everyone is saying, they're throwing up, open the doors and saying, okay, come on in and be a part of this. There seems to be, there's a big piece there of preparation and knowledge that people of the majority have already had privilege to, and have already had, you know, they have all the knowledge. What do leaders, African-American leaders, need to do to help other African Americans prepare for this seed opening or attempts to open up and make
it happen? There's two things Afro-American leaders need to do. They need to focus on spiritual. They need to focus on education. When you had the civil rights movement, the key to the civil rights movement was spiritual focus and education. That was the key. They were focused on spiritually, not doing things from a standpoint of revenge or, you know, being angry. Martin Luther King's greatest success was he was doing things from nonviolence. Mm-hmm. He was doing things from the pulpit. He was doing things spiritually. Right. Yeah. At the same token, they were honed and locked in on people getting education. They knew that, and just like, I go back to my family, your brain is good as anybody else's. What you learn, they can't take from you. You can learn math just as well as they can learn math. You can learn biology just as well as anybody else can learn biology. Exactly. You can learn, you know, all these other things, law, everything else, just as well as anybody else. Right? These two things we've lost along the way, in my opinion. They get too caught up on some of these other agendas and some of these other things and trying to include all this other stuff, and we got to get back to the basics. If you got a spiritual compass, you will operate in a manner that will be blessed. If you have education to go with that, and that is a strong combination,
right? And I want to just throw in here, if I could piggyback off of that just for a second. You know, when I was coming along, it was get a college education and go get a job. And that was kind of like the way to get, you know, some measure of success. And I think what we're learning now, and even seeing how you have grown in your own professional life, what we're learning now is that when we say education, we're talking about get as much knowledge. It may not necessarily be the traditional high school to college track that and master's and doctoral degree track that was pushed, you know, during my generation, but get as much knowledge, as much skills as you can possibly get so that you are less dependent. And one of the things that we talk about here at Unboxed is leaders are not emotionally or in other ways dependent on other people. It's not to say that we are not cooperative, but it's that you're not dependent, where another person doesn't have control over your life. And the goal is to have control over your own life, not where somebody else has it, not where when they're downsizing, you got knots in your stomach because you're wondering, oh, Lord, am I next? And you're begging the boss, please, and you're pleading for a raise or whatever it may be, but that you have agency over your own life, over your own growth, of your own spirituality. Get the knowledge that is necessary, however that may look within your sphere. Am I on track with that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I can piggyback into that because that's how I kind of segue into what I was doing. I was working in the banking center channel, learning how to do sales and doing things like that. That sales experience and them seeing me interact with people, unbeknownst to me, led me to get an interview to take over someone's agency, right? But if I hadn't been exposed in that sales channel, I wouldn't have gotten exposed to the opportunity. The person saw me, I didn't see them, but they called me.
Yeah.
Because of that, right? So to your point, it's about getting the knowledge. It's about doing those things because people are doomed because of their lack of knowledge, the lack of wisdom, right? And, you know, we share more of this in our communities. We can have more successful communities, but just happier people.
Yeah.
Right. As opposed to running around trying to chase down something that they told you is a blueprint. You know, look what you can do. Right. I see certain communities out there that where people turn the dials over in the community 70, 80 times.
Yeah. Right.
And all those folks aren't working for somebody else. They're all working for themselves. They got some kind of small business or some kind of shop they're running or store they're running or something they're doing, right? And one size doesn't fit all, right? Some people can go and do something in business. Some people can go and do something in the arts. Some people can go and do something in social. Some people can go do things, a lot of different things. But you find ways in which you can supplement that.
Exactly.
And then build out and do those kind of things, right? So, I mean, we got so much, to your point, we can unbox and unpack here when you look at this. But if you go into this from the standpoint of education and then find out what areas you want to go into. I go back to the aptitude test, right? Yes. If I don't want to do this, if I don't want to do that, I took the aptitude test. And it kind of guided me to say, yeah, business is your strength. You knew that, but this reinforced it.
Exactly.
Right? Or you can say that, you know, speaking is my strength and I'm going to be an orator. Okay, that's great. If you're really a good orator, maybe you want to be a politician because a good politician is a good orator. Barack Obama. Yeah,
exactly.
Right? I mean, so think about what you want to do and how you want to do it. It's not all about money, but it's about being successful and happy and being a fulfilled life, right? All of us are created differently, right? We have different strengths and gifts. And if you learn how to use those gifts and strengths, then that's where you really find fulfillment in your life, right?
For sure, for sure.
Wow.
Robert, that's I think that all of that is, I think Robert said earlier, you should write a book on raising daughters. I think your second book should be on helping to raise up entrepreneurs. I think James, you've got such a great story, especially with respect to the influence that your mom and dad had on your life. I always say, man, you can't put a price on good parenting. It's just been wonderful to hear your.
And can I say one thing?
Yeah, Rafael,
I know that it's time to close out the show, but I also just want to highlight this during African American Month, and that is, it's really good. You know, his father was a physician, his mother was a dance studio owner, his family was educated and stuff. It's good to hear stories like this because I think sometimes in the African American community, we celebrate those who come from, you know, the quote unquote broken home. And I was a gangbanger. And then, you know, I was out in the streets and then I turned around and became successful. Those stories are important, but this is just as important to hear the stories of people who come from sound, intact families, whose family members made an investment in them, who worked hard, pursued their goals, and became successful. I think that we as a community have to tell those stories just as much as we tell the story about the guy who did 10 years in prison, got out, started his own business, and became successful. I think we need to be more intentional about telling both of those stories, and that's why I'm so glad that James Sweat came here today to tell us the other side of the story. This is awesome.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that, Robert, because I think from the other side, for people who are immigrants to this country, obviously our European American friends, that's how they tend to view the African American experience, is you're coming from a place of just complete brokenness, which is crazy because they don't really, they never really, it's hard for them to acknowledge the source of all of that, but we'll get into that at another time. But It is good to see that perspective, that here is a family who modeled the American way. And then you start asking yourself, okay, if their family is together, why is this guy having to fight to get to law school? You know, he's doing everything that you tell him to do. So it helps us to start asking these questions of,
wow,
well, you told him to, you know, have a strong nuclear family and to, you know, one wife, one husband, all of these Judeo-Christian principles that you've said that you got to live by, they're doing that. Why is it that there's only, like you said, James, why is there only three jobs that you can do as a Black person in 1930? So I think that I agree with you. I think that those stories are very important, not only as so African-Americans can see, but so that people who are not African-American can see. and hear and realize that, oh, you know, this is, you know, this is normal.
Well, the other thing I would just say is that it's also more than just what you see, right? Yeah. It's more than what you see in TV. It's more than what you see in the media. Unfortunately, too many people want to be the next TikTok person or the next Michael Jordan or the next Beyonce. Everybody can't do that.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, there's so many other things that we can do and we should do. And in our Black communities, there's more things to being a doctor and a lawyer. There's more things to being a preacher. There's more things than that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there are a lot of things you can do out here. To your point, there are other Black families that are intact that are doing things as best they can to raise their families and develop their families. With that said, we still have a problem of systematic racism in our country.
Exactly.
Right.
I think problem is an understatement, but yeah. for conventionality, we'll just say problem.
Yeah, you know, but knowing that is important for you, so you can then move forward with that, right?
Yeah.
So I'm encouraged that, you know, more people are beginning to see things from a different lens, and more people begin to question certain things and stop taking everything as face value. They see it as face value, right? So the more programs you have like this, the more programs we have where people can talk about things that are important, things that are values that are important for their families and their family development. And getting back to some basic things, it's okay to say I'm a spiritual person. I'm a Christian.
Absolutely.
It's okay to say that, you know what, I want to do what's right, and I believe in doing what's right, right? And you know it's wrong to take a cookie out the cookie drawer. Don't do it. You know it's wrong to touch a hot stove. Don't do it.
Yeah.
So it's basic things that you know that's encoded in you, that's been given to you by your creator. And so it's okay to do good. It's okay to do good for others. And I think we need to do more of that.
Exactly.
Amen to that. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our show today. I want to thank you once again, James Sweat, for joining us, for all of your insights, for all of your wisdom, for sharing with us an amazing perspective of your own family history and the work that you are doing to help build your community, the work that you're doing as an entrepreneur and as a business person, as a father, as a complete and whole leader. We really appreciate it. And we have been edified and blessed by your presence today. Thank you once again, of course, to Dr. Davis, always for your insight and the paycheck. Always appreciate that. The Unboxed broadcast is produced by Bobby Davis Jr. Graphics and video design provided by Damon Mace, and marketing and promotion by John Sedano. Remember to visit our website at www.unboxthelead.com. For Dr. Robert Davis, I'm R.P. Soriano. We look forward to seeing you at the next broadcast of Unbox as we help you unbox the power and potential of your leadership. Be well.
Unbox provides a full-service leaders peer support community that helps high-level leaders become more authentic leaders who build healthy workplace cultures and reach their personal life goals. To learn more and discover how we can take your leadership and your life to the next level, please visit our website at unboxtolead.com. That's unboxed, the number 2, lead.com. Again, that's unboxed, the number 2, to lead.com.